We've been talking about the character of the sower. Let me pass that on down there. The character of the sower. And as we kind of worked our way, through some of that, the different traits of a sower, we got down here to about the middle of the page when Jesus sent out disciples. And what we were trying to do here really was just look at some of the instruction that he gave to, really it was his apostles that he sent out. There's a couple of different times in particular when he sent them out here in Luke chapter 9 and Matthew chapter 10, what we were kind of calling a limited commission. We talked about this already, but just reviewing a little bit. He sent the 12 out. They were sent to whom specifically to teach? To the Jews. Fulfilling prophecy in that regard. So they were sent out, and what were they to preach? Kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's right before you, basically, is what they were saying to these. They performed miracles to confirm the word that they were teaching, much like what Jesus had been doing. And it became known very quickly that these were the men who were with Jesus. They knew Jesus, and they were speaking the same things he was. Just try to picture how all of this is unfolding there. And so the instructions to them from Jesus was basically, you need to travel light. You're going to move from city to city. And if people don't accept the truth, if they won't listen to you, what were they to do? Yeah, move on. Shake the dust off your feet. Move on. And if they went to a house where people would listen, what would they do? Move in. That's right. If it was worthy, they would stay right there because they had no provisions. They didn't have extra shoes. They didn't have an extra cloak. They took no money. And so there were those who took them in and who would listen, those to whom they could teach. Moving into the next point is where we start tonight, Matthew chapter 28. This was a little bit later time. This would be after the death and resurrection of Jesus. Jesus had been on the earth or after his resurrection some 40 days or so. And he'd already told his disciples that he wasn't going to be with them much longer, that he was going to be leaving them. Well, it's about to happen. And these are some of the last words of Jesus to his disciples, Matthew 28, verse 19, his instruction. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatever I have commanded you, and behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. What's different in this charge that he's given compared to the first one? What are some points here that stand out? Okay. This is kind of a major change here in some things. The whole world is the field now. Okay, so they're having to kind of move out farther. What were they to do? Make disciples. What exactly does that mean? Make disciples. Okay. We see a couple or more different elements here of what they were to do. It's here. Okay. Interesting point. In that first commission, they were preaching the kingdom of God is at hand, as though that's something still kind of unfolding. Now it's happened. Or in the very near future here. We're 10 days or so away probably from the establishment of the church in Jerusalem. In Acts chapter 2, we read about that. But it's like right here. So some things are unfolding here. What other points stand out? That's right. So there's going to be an adding to that kingdom coming up here in a few more pages in Acts chapter 2. Okay, good. What else? I'm still thinking about this make disciples thing. We've got to work through that, as in, what does that mean? Okay, teaching has to take place. How else, what is a disciple? A follower. And for someone to be a follower, there has to first be some teaching before anyone's going to follow. When Jesus said, when we think back a few lessons here, when Jesus started calling his apostles, he said to them, "Follow me." And I think we were all pretty well in agreement that it wasn't like all of a sudden Jesus walked up and they had no idea who this man was and he said, "Follow me," and they just decided to follow. What had already happened? They knew something about Jesus. You know, what's the evidence for that? How do we know that? John the Baptist had been preaching. Everybody knew that. Everybody knew about John the Baptist preaching about this Jesus, this one who is coming. What else do we know? Why did they know something about Jesus? He had his own reputation. Okay? Who were they looking for? The Messiah. They'd already been looking for the Messiah. Could this be the Messiah? They said, remember? Okay, so there. I guess my point with that is there was teaching already that had taken place when Jesus said, "Follow me," they had reason to follow. For there to be disciples, it's interesting that New King James renders it this way, "make disciples." That in itself indicates something has to happen. If you're going to make something, you have to do something. For there to be disciples, you have to make them, so to speak. How do we do that? The Earl's already addressed this. It's going to come by teaching. In fact, what if you have a King James Version, what does it say? Does anybody have a King James Version? It says teach. It says teach is what King James Version says. So basically it says teach. Baptize and teach is what it says. Or this is actually a very accurate translation in New King James when it says, make disciples. How? Baptizing them. And then do what? Teach them to observe all things I've commanded you. You see, there's sort of several steps here involved in this charge now that has been given to go into all of the world. That it says, go and make disciples. What does that eliminate? People who won't follow. Okay, I mean, teaching still takes place. They don't follow, they're not disciples. Go on. That's the idea. I mean, kind of going back to the first sending out of the 12, you know, shake the dust off your feet and go on if they don't listen. Okay, what else does it eliminate? And I may be going a different track than what you're thinking on this. Let me tell you what I'm thinking. Invariably, every time I go to Africa, when I'm in the airport on a plane going to Africa, there'll be a number of people getting on that plane who are going on a missionary trip. It's interesting to me. Last trip I went, there were some who were carrying horns and guitars and musical instruments. They were going on a musical missionary trip. That was the first time I'd heard that term used. There are others who are going to build hospitals. They are going to teach people how to plant gardens. They're going to build schools or going to build houses as a part of their missionary trip. Interesting. Not saying there's anything wrong per se with an individual doing any of those things. But this is what they view the work of the church to be. This is their missionary trip. You know, and they're often very vocal and anxious to tell you about their missionary trip. It's interesting when they say, "Well, what are you doing?" "I'm going to preach." And there's some interesting responses that come to that sometime. And it's usually something like, "Really?" As though this is a novel concept. One time when I was trying to make the plane reservation, talking to the Delta girl there on the phone, or trying to make reservations, which usually takes forever when you're making this kind of a trip. And so there's a little bit of small talk. And so this young, sounded like a young lady, she says, "And so you going for business?" Just making some small talk. I said, "Well, I don't know if I call it business. I'm going on a," I just said, "missionary trip," you know, because just hope people, some people might understand. At this point, I started realizing how few people did understand. She says, oh, really? What are you going to do? Are you going to build hospitals? Are you going to build houses or whatever? And I said, well, no, I'm actually just going to preach the gospel. And it was kind of a pause, and she says, really? That's a good idea. And I said, well, it's not mine. Jesus came up with it. And that has just stuck in my mind. And, okay, so when I'm reading this, and I'm thinking about this, okay, and Jesus is sending out the 12. Go make disciples, baptizing them, teach them to observe all things. If you want to talk about a missionary trip, there you go. That's what it's about. I'm not saying there's anything wrong. If you decide you want to go to Africa or anywhere and help poor people build a house or a hospital or a garden, I think that's wonderful. But if you want to talk about a missionary trip, you know, you want to talk about what a disciple of Christ needs to do as far as the commission, the charge that the Lord gave, it narrows right down right here. Exactly. Yep. The book of Acts. Absolutely. Absolutely. All the way through. That's what he did. That's exactly right. Exactly right. That's the evidence. That's the confirmation. If for some reason we had difficulty, we read this and we went, oh, I wonder what that means. Okay, I'm not sure why we'd have a hard time understanding that. But if we read that and we said, oh, I need some help understanding this, read the book of Acts. And it's fulfilled, or it's being fulfilled when you read that. It defines, so to speak, what the passage says. Other thoughts? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And the whole denominational concept of what is the church becomes very different. That's right. Okay. Let's break this down just a little bit. Go ahead.
We seem to be coming to a turning point in the teaching of the world. Christ is here.
Yeah.
He's saying, come follow me.
Right.
I'm here and I'm showing you who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're turning to say, follow him.
Yeah.
He has proved.
That's right.
He is the Son.
He's confirmed himself.
He's confirmed, and now.
Yeah. Especially right then, it's real hard to deny the resurrection. He has proven himself. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So often in the religious world, I think what we see is these mission-type groups and that mindset is really treating the symptom of sin.
Oh, yeah.
And not the sin itself.
Right.
And I think that's what we see when people are trying to address, you know, poverty or things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, dealing with the symptom and not the real issue, the heart of the issue. That's a good point. Okay, let's think here for a moment about, I'm seeing 4 points right here. Go, make disciples, baptizing them, teach them to observe all things. And while, okay, we're getting on a sidetrack here for just a moment. We're going to come back. You know, because this is not really where our lesson is going. But just think, just for a moment, about what these things mean. Go. What does that say? What does it mean? Action. It's got to happen. There has to be someone who's going. There has to be this teaching. Okay, go. Do what? Make disciples. I mean, this just narrows down what is the purpose of going. Okay? How? Well, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is making a disciple. And then do what? Teach them. You have to keep teaching. Oh, we mess up on this. Oh, we mess up on this. Let me say it again. You work hard to study with somebody and to baptize them into Christ. And I imagine we've all seen it happen. And in a short time, they kind of flitter away. Hey, sometimes that's just because that's as far as their interest goes. All right. Sometimes it's because that's as far as our interest has gone. And baptizing just leads us to the next step of teaching them to observe all things I have commanded you. And that seems like that takes a long time. There's a lot of teaching that continues and goes on here. And so we've been looking at the character of a sower. And we've looked here at a couple of examples of Jesus sending out sowers, so to speak. You know, his apostles, the limited commission, they were to go to certain ones, and now it's going to all the world, you know, and preaching Jesus and making disciples and all. And so it's growing, it's expanding. And what we see is, and this has been mentioned, that's exactly what these apostles did. They went out and they made disciples. And those disciples went out and made disciples. And those disciples went out and made more disciples. And that's how the church has been propagated for the last 2,000 years. And still has to be doing those same things. Look at the last point on page 8 here. It says, think about this. List some reasons why we should be busy with personal evangelism. You can kind of go a lot of ways with that. Let's think, you must two or three things here that stand out. List some reasons why we should be busy with personal evangelism. What would you say? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. And so in some ways that sort of like ends that portion of the discussion. He said so. So go do it. Okay. What else? Oh. Yeah. Good point. Isn't that scary? You ever think about that? That bothers me sometimes. What if we just haven't been doing what we need to do? Isn't that scary to think about? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Other thoughts? Good comments. Let's look on here. The next lesson. Lesson number five. Who needs a copy of lesson five? We handed some out on Sunday. Let's see who else. There you go. Who else needs? I saw him there, yeah. Okay. Lesson five. So that should be page 9 and 10 that you have. Okay. Okay. Did you have four? You had four? Okay. There you go. All right. Okay. Huh? You want one too? Thank you. All right. The parable of the sower. So some of us here have probably read through this parable in our lifetimes like 850 times or something. And we seem pretty familiar with it. And yet I just wonder if there's not some points we might be able to pull out of this parable. It's a parable Jesus taught about sowing seed. And it would seem to me that one of the points that he's trying to make out of this is something about the different kind of soils that might be encountered by the sower. And if we are trying to sow the seed, we will encounter these different kinds of soil. And so as we kind of look through this process, hopefully we can understand better the work that has been given to us to do and the work of being a sower, and maybe even will tell us something about how we have to equip ourselves to teach as we go through that. The second paragraph here, it says, parables were told by Jesus to convey a message he wanted his disciples to know. That's a point as we get into a lesson that I hope we'll come to understand a little bit better. Those who were not spiritually minded would not understand what he was saying. In fact, parables may have sounded foolish to those who did not know God. These parables were designed in such a way that the spiritual mind could grasp a deeper meaning of the mysteries of the kingdom of God. We are turning to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13. There are three accounts, actually, of the parable of the sower. We're primarily going to look at Matthew chapter 13. And we might look briefly at the other ones as we kind of go through. Matthew chapter 13 is kind of a long reading. Let's kind of work our way through this, and I think it'll be helpful for us as we do. The same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the seaside. A great multitude were gathered together to him, so that he got into a boat and sat. And the whole multitude stood on the shore. Let's stop there for just a minute. I just find the picture of that being kind of interesting when you think about that. Actually, it's question number four, if you look down a little bit. What do we learn about teaching when we look at the demeanor of Jesus in verses 1 and 2? What do we see? Humility. What would be different about that as compared to some of the teachers of the day? The Pharisees were known for being humble? No. Yeah, very pious. Yeah, high-minded they were. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. A good teacher on college campus seemingly is easy to spot. That's it. He drew you in. Yeah. Why do I get the same picture when I think about Jesus teaching? Do you see that? Yeah. Neil?
Yeah, basically he was. Yeah.
So everyone could hear.
Yeah, why did he get in the boat?
He was here, the shoreline up like this, everyone had a lot of sight.
Yeah.
Everyone had great seats.
Yeah. Yeah. He started on the seashore. Do you see that? He got in the boat and he went out. That's right. Good point. A long way. Yeah. Not the only time we would see Jesus teaching from the seashore or from a boat. This posture, his sitting here, is kind of interesting to me. You know, Jesus was very humble, you know, in character and demeanor and in his teaching. And yet at the same time, I can think of some of his teaching where he was very much to the point. Right? You know, and if there were those who were hypocrites and not who they needed to be, he was not backward about telling them that. That doesn't take away from his humility, but, you know, but still. This seating thing is kind of interesting, too. You know, actually, that was kind of the posture of teachers. That very often, we're kind of backwards here. I should be sitting down and you should be standing up. That very often would be what was happening, you know, in a setting such as that. It would very often be that way. The teacher would be sitting and the listeners would be standing around the teacher. You know, and so that's kind of typical in that way. But it's just an interesting picture to me to try to get that in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Reading the law. Yeah. 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 Interesting thoughts. Get all that in your mind. Let's read a little bit further here. Verse 3. And he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, Behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. Some fell on stony places, where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched and became because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. But others fell on good ground, and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. I can picture that he stopped speaking then. So we read further through the text. I think that was kind of the end of his telling the parable to the multitude. And so the posture, then, those who were standing around, you know, there were some, surely, that were going, oh. And some that were going, what? What's the rest of the story? You know, and because and there is more to that. But as we read on, I mean, I think that was kind of where that ended right there, but and because now there's some more to this right here. But let's just stop right here for a minute and kind of think this through a little bit. What is a parable? I mean, the text just says he spoke many things to them in parables. Okay. What's a parable? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. A story that we understand in today's vernacular, so to speak, that has a higher meaning to it. What else? Someone else going to say something? To know the meaning. I mean, the physical part of the story here, we're all going like, well, yeah. I mean, we know what this all means. We understand what happens with this soil. When I was a kid, you know, we're talking about parables. I remember this, you know,
a long time ago. What is a parable? An earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And that has just been a definition that has just stood out in my mind for a long time. So I understand that really well. You know, an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. As long as what you were saying there, Earl. I mean, the earthly story is something that we understand. As you read through the parable where Jesus is saying, well, here's a sower that went out and sowed some seed. Some fell by the wayside. Here's what happened. We're not surprised what happened to the seed that fell on the wayside. There's some that fell on stony places. Here's what happened. We're not surprised. I mean, we understand the earthly story. But there's a bigger meaning to this. There's a deeper meaning to this. The purpose of a parable? Well, the story goes on. Verse 10. And the disciples came to him and said, why do you speak to them in parables? Okay, think about this for a minute. There's two different groups of people identified. Do you see that? Who are the two groups of people identified here? The disciples. So there are those then who have come to Jesus, and they've got some questions. I mean, they're understanding, okay, there's more to this story. Now, they don't necessarily know what it is yet, because that's why they're asking. Okay? And so you have the disciples who come and say, why do you speak to them? The them? Maybe those who aren't asking the questions? You know, those who are not interested. What was the last thing Jesus said in this first part of the parable? Yeah. So there are some who have ears to listen, and they've come to Jesus saying, okay, so what does this mean? No. Them didn't care to understand. They're the ones that have gone on. And so now to his disciples, he has some explanation. He says in verse 11, he answered and said to them, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him will be given, and he will have more abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore, I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah was fulfilled, which says, by hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the heart of this people has grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, their eyes have closed, lest they should see with their eyes, hear with their ears, should understand with their heart, and should turn, and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see, and have not seen them, and to hear those things which you hear, and have not heard. Whew. Okay, a lot was just said. In a couple of minutes here, let's just kind of pick through that a little bit. This is Jesus giving some explanation, you know, to the question, why do you speak to them in parables? When I read through this explanation, I draw a little bit even narrower view of the them. Who do you think the them are? More specific, not just the multitude. Who is in that multitude? Some of those Jews that just thought they had it all wrapped up. Yeah, you. Rick, you. Right.
But they desired to,
that's right,
understand it. And they sought further the explanation.
Jesus said, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. That's an invitation. And that was an invitation given to all that were there, to the whole multitude. But all did not have ears to hear. But some did. Some of the disciples now have come to him. In the text here, there's a prophet. He quotes a prophet. Jesus quotes a prophet. And this is where I kind of narrow down some. Who is them? I mean, what Jesus was saying of those who did not have ears to hear was nothing new. I mean, he's basically saying, you know, that these are just like the children of Israel in the day of Isaiah the prophet, who would not listen to God, whose ears had grown dull. It's not that they didn't have ears, but their ears, they didn't listen. They didn't want to hear what the Lord said. I mean, God had sent prophets like Isaiah, you know, hundreds of years prior, you know, trying to draw his people closer to him. But their heart, verse 15 said, for the heart of this people had grown dull. There was the issue. And here we are in the first century. The Messiah is among them, and their heart still was not open. Well, guess what? Even today, there are those who do not have ears to hear, whose hearts are not open. It's always been that way, and I suppose it'll always be that way. But the sower's still going out. We'll see a little more of that as we get into the second part of the parable. Our time is gone here. This kind of put down a peg. We're somewhere here around question 3 or 4 on the page. And somewhere in that area we're going to kind of take up again on Sunday, Lord willing. And so, you know, read this parable over. And these other two accounts in Mark chapter 4 and Luke chapter 8, read those over too, because they do offer a little bit of insight on a couple of other points. You know, that when we get into the second page, that may stand out and we can maybe make some comments on, and work through that lesson. It's not real hard, you know, to kind of work through that lesson there and have some points ready to talk about on Sunday. Appreciate your good comments tonight.